The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
A setback for the SEC as a judge rules that a digital coin isn't a security. Plus, America's top general calls for speedier weapon sales to Taiwan, and forecasters put 93 million Americans under heat warnings and advisories as stifling weather continues.
So it's really gotten quite dangerous, you know, even in states that are used to dealing with very high temperatures.
It's Friday, July 14th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin with cryptocurrencies, as a court ruling in favor of crypto company Ripple has sent shares in other digital coin companies surging. The ruling by a district judge suggested that a digital token isn't a security, dealing a significant blow to the Securities and Exchange Commission's efforts to regulate the industry. And here with more on the significance of this case is Wall Street Journal finance editor Alex Frangos. Alex, walk us through the basics here of what this court ruling means.
Well, it's kind of a big deal because the SEC has been trying to clamp down on cryptocurrencies, but they have to show that they have jurisdiction to do so. The way they've been doing that is by saying that cryptocurrencies are securities, which is a definition of a type of asset. And this court basically said, no, this particular cryptocurrency, XRP, which is produced by this company, Ripple, is in fact not a security and therefore can't be regulated by the Securities Exchange Commission. So therefore, the SEC can't do anything about it. So it makes it very problematic for the SEC's much broader effort to crack down on cryptocurrencies.
Does this then mean that nobody has jurisdiction to regulate digital tokens?
Well, it's unclear. There's a separate federal agency called the CFTC, which regulates commodities and futures, and it has jurisdiction, but its laws are a little bit different from the SEC's, which are more robust and have more teeth in terms of being able to protect investors.
And Alex, it is Ripple that is the company directly involved in this ruling, and yet it's another crypto firm, Coinbase, that seems like it may be particularly affected by this, right?
The Ripple case actually started several years ago. It's been winding its way through the courts. In the meantime, lots of other companies have gotten a lot bigger. Coinbase is a pretty big exchange. It's tried to become regulated. It's tried to be in the mainstream, but the SEC has brought some big cases against it. And its main argument is that the SEC hasn't come out and said which coins it believes are securities, that it's done so through these court cases rather than through the regulatory process. And so this Ripple case appears to be very supportive to Coinbase, and Coinbase's shares shot up yesterday and continue to go up in early trading this morning.
That was Journal Finance Editor Alex Frangos. Alex, thanks.
Thank you.
The Federal Reserve is meeting later this month with investors scrambling to work out whether another hike in interest rates is in the cards or whether the Fed will continue its pause. Our chief economics correspondent Nick Timmeros has been speaking to policymakers and says that most officials support a quarter percentage point increase in July that would lift rates to a 22-year high. Though Nick says there is a hefty debate about whether a second hike should happen in September.
There are people on both sides. There are a couple of Fed officials that say, look, if we really believe that it takes time for these moves to influence economic activity, then let's just be patient and let our policy moves that we've already done do their job. There's a larger group of officials on the other side who have been more worried that the Fed hasn't done enough to bring inflation down, and they think the Fed's going to have to raise rates at least a couple more times. And at least some of these people have said, let's get it done sooner rather than later. And so they could actually push for back-to-back interest rate increases at the Fed's July and September meetings. And then there's an even larger group probably in the middle that may not be as motivated to make any decision now on whether that second rate increase is going to be needed.
And we should learn which camp has won out when Fed Chair Jerome Powell briefs the press at the end of its meeting on July 26th. Coming up, with a searing heat wave stretching from the West Coast to the Gulf set to drag on, we'll look at how communities, the grid, and businesses are coping. That and more after the break.
Hey Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the big hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, and providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
At least 93 million Americans are currently under excessive heat warnings and heat advisories this morning. According to the National Weather Service, a searing heat wave continues to engulf much of the American West and Southwest. With that extreme weather following months of new heat records around the world, with the human and economic costs abounding. Wall Street Journal editor Ken Brown has been looking into this trend, along with energy reporter Jennifer Hiller, who is in Houston, Texas today. Jennifer, paint a picture for us of how hot it is there. What does it feel like?
Yeah, it feels a bit like an oven. We've been up over 100 for a bunch of days, and we were around 99 yesterday. And the joke in our bureau here was that 99 felt so much better than 102. But really across the South, the Southwest, everyone is feeling these just excessive temperatures. We're all used to quite hot summers. It definitely got hot faster this year than what we normally see. And it stuck around a lot longer. We are all kind of baking under this heat dome.
Are you hearing about this starting to affect people, businesses, the way of life in that state?
People are having to be extremely careful about things like hydration and the times of day that they're working outside, especially for people who are working outside and don't get much of a break. So there have been instances of workers collapsing. A postal worker in Dallas died recently from heat exposure. There have been some deaths of hikers out in West Texas. So it's really gotten quite dangerous. You know, even in states that are used to dealing with very high temperatures, it does feel like an unusually hot summer.
Ken, I want to bring you into the discussion now because this heat wave is affecting many states beyond Texas. The National Weather Service is forecasting daytime highs of up to 115 degrees Fahrenheit throughout parts of the Southwest. Other desert regions, it says, could see heat topping 120 degrees. Can American cities, American infrastructure cope with that?
This is the test, right? And the interesting thing is the infrastructure seems to get tested every year by a storm or a wildfire or a heat wave. So we've seen it crack in a bunch of places like California. So far, the grid is okay. And this was a well-signaled heat wave, but we'll see.
Another issue, agriculture, right? A number of states across the South have strong agricultural economies. Is it clear what the impact of this heat could mean for ranches, for farms?
We know heat waves hurt agricultural output. And in the South, obviously, they know it gets hot. So some of it is the water situation. And what we've seen, the real agricultural story in the U.S. is the drought in the Midwest, which is going to really slam grain harvests. And so what we're seeing with climate change and the impact of climate change is these occurrences are more frequent and more severe. And that sort of build on each other.
Is it clear what the economic consequences of all of this could be now and going forward? You mentioned they are there.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of studies that show that extreme heat reduce economic output, and it makes logical sense, right? People who work outside can't build buildings as efficiently. You can't do agriculture as efficiently. Things break down. So it hurts economic output. The issue is just the things that happen in these places now become untenable, that you can't do them anymore. Does agriculture get permanently hurt? Does infrastructure unable to operate in the heat and things have to change? And then you have a cost of fixing things and then you have the lost output. And we're seeing that happen all over the world in a lot of ways.
Ken, this is not the first heat wave to hit the U.S. What has previous extreme weather told us about the country's capacity to handle the heat this time around?
The big thing in the U.S. was last year in the Pacific Northwest, which was not used to the heat, and there was not a lot of air conditioning. If it was at least residential, there were a lot of people. It was a health issue, and that took a lot of resources and was tragic. One thing we know about heat is the deadliest form of weather, more than hurricanes, more than cold. Heat is the thing that kills people because people overheat and the body can't handle it. And so we'll see some of that. You always see it, but it hasn't gotten to extreme levels yet.
Ken, so far then, it seems like with some exceptions, grids, Many businesses in the U.S. have been holding up, albeit with varying degrees of air conditioning to help. And yet across our coverage this week of the Journal, you could be excused for thinking we may be at a bit of a tipping point here about the perceived risk associated with certain areas in the U.S. and their exposure to extreme heat, other extreme weather, especially in our coverage of insurance.
Right. So business is trying to adapt to this. And so insurance is one of these businesses that essentially is trying to predict the future, right? They're insuring you with a bet that they're going to come out with a profit at the end of it. And so these are unknowns in the future and things are changing. And so it's very hard for them. And so they are raising rates. They are reducing coverage. They are trying to be very careful to manage the risk that they take. So they're looking out in the future and seeing things getting worse. And it may not be just heat. It's heat, which is drought, which is wildfires, which causes a huge amount of damage and death. And so this is all the stuff that the folks who look out in the future are thinking about. People who think about infrastructure and the grid are doing the same thing. They're trying to make it more resilient. Part of all the government spending on climate that we've seen in the last year is for adaptation and resilience. And again, what happens with climate change, at least this is what the scientists say, you're going to get hot days in the South. You're going to get hurricanes in Florida. But the events are more extreme and more frequent. And so you reach a tipping point where the extremeness and the frequency start to really change the way people behave.
That was Wall Street Journal editor Ken Brown in New York. Ken, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Hiller in Houston, Texas. Jennifer, stay hydrated. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
A spending fight is unfolding in Congress. Late yesterday, the Republican-controlled House passed a series of amendments to an annual defense policy bill that would limit abortion access and transgender care for troops, as well as defund diversity initiatives. Democrats warn that those social policy measures, which are seen as poison pills to many in the party, could derail the National Defense Authorization Act, which has passed Congress on a bipartisan basis for decades. A final House vote on the spending bill had been expected today, but its timing was uncertain as of late Thursday. The Pentagon's top general is saying that the U.S. should speed up arms sales and weapons deliveries to Taiwan if it hopes to prevent China from taking military action against the island. Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told reporters in Tokyo today that steps to improve Taiwan's defense capabilities should make it clear to Beijing that the costs of attack would exceed any benefit. U.S. officials have acknowledged that billions of dollars in approved arms deliveries had yet to reach Taiwan, while a major new arms package has been delayed. China regards Taiwan as part of its territory and has said it would use military means to take control if necessary. Officials in Hong Kong are taking their crackdown on dissidents overseas. The city has aggressively quelled dissent after Beijing imposed a strict national security law in 2020, but it's only recently that Journal reporter Dan Strumpf says authorities have put public pressure on those who fled abroad to countries including the U.S., U.K., and Australia.
Just last week at a press conference, some of the top police in Hong Kong announced that they are putting a bounty of 1 million Hong Kong dollars, which is about 130,000 U.S. dollars, for any information related to the capture of 8 wanted overseas fugitives in Hong Kong. These are some of the most prominent pro-democracy activists that the city saw.
The U.S. State Department has called the bounties a dangerous precedent that threatened the rights and freedoms of people worldwide. While Hong Kong's security secretary has defended the bounties and said endangering national security is a dangerous offense. And is Diet Coke safe to drink? Two findings from different arms of the World Health Organization are adding confusion to the debate over the health effects of aspartame, the sugar substitute found in food and beverages. Yesterday, the International Agency for Research on Cancer suggested a potential link to the liver cancer hepatocellular carcinoma based on limited evidence, while a joint committee of the WHO and Food and Agriculture Organization found no convincing evidence of harm. Despite those contradictory conclusions, the WHO does have one clear recommendation. Limit aspartame consumption to 40 milligrams a day for each kilogram that you weigh. for a 175-pound person, that's 16 cans. And finally, there may be rain in the forecast, but that shouldn't stop play at the Wimbledon tennis tournament, which is quickly approaching its dramatic conclusion in the London suburbs. The men's semifinals are later this morning, Eastern Time, ahead of a Sunday final, while the women's final is already set. Our European sports reporter Joshua Robinson is excited for what comes next.
The Wimbledon men's semifinals are about as stacked as they've ever been. We've got the top three seeds still in the tournament, and that starts with Novak Djokovic, who is bidding to win a Grand Slam. He faces Jannik Sinner in the first matchup on center court. And then after that is what's sure to be a barn burner between Carlos Alcaraz, the young talent of tennis, against Daniil Medvedev, the Russian who is back at Wimbledon now that the ban has been lifted on players from Russia and Belarus. The women's final is on Saturday, and that features two women trying to win their first majors. Marketa Vondrousova is the first unseeded woman to reach the final since Billie Jean King in 1963, and Ons Jabeur is hoping to become the first woman from Africa or the Arab world to win a Grand Slam title.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.